Meet Your Future, ein Podcast der Jungen Deutschen Physikalischen Gesellschaft. Herzlich willkommen zu dieser Sonderfolge von Meet Your Future. In dieser Folge haben wir einen ganz besonderen Gast. Sie ist eine der 175 Inspirierenden der DPG und wir freuen uns sehr, sie heute begrüßen zu dürfen. Sie spricht allerdings besser Englisch als Deutsch, deshalb switch to English. Welcome to this special episode of Meet Your Future. As always, Serena is with me.
Hello.
And I'm very happy to welcome Dr. Anna Chobry. Hello.
Hello, everybody.
Anna, how old are you and who is your employer?
So, my name is Anna Chobry, and you pronounce it very well. Thanks a lot for it. I very appreciate it.
Thank you.
And my role model is Dr. Sally Ride. This is the first physicist from America who went to space. And she actually went to space at the year that I was born. So you can then, when you check later, learn how old I am. Currently, I'm living in Bremen. This is a space city. This is the German space Silicon Valley. Mm-hmm. And today I will speak to you about my two careers in space. So one is the thermal engineer that I was working in Airbus, Defense and Space, and manager, coordinator of projects and studies in OHB.
All right, so you're working in the field of aerospace industry. This is a field that is very interesting for many physicists, and we will go into it in more detail later. But as always, we will start right at the beginning. Why did you decide to study physics?
So before I say it to you, firstly, I would like to say this is a very special day for me to record it. I did not realize it, but I think behind my head, I had this in my mind that today is the 22nd. Of April, and this is the Earth Day. And as you know, my background is also in environmental physics, and this topic is also very important for me. Mm-hmm. And the space actually supports achievements of the sustainable goals of the United Nations. Mm-hmm. And you can, for example, think about the quality education. There are so many people who don't have the proper access to education. And through the telecommunication, for example, internet through sky, we can provide important access to internet, to the education, and to the places that are very remote or the people who live in the remote areas. Mm-hmm. So this is something that is very important for me, and I really wanted to mention it. And the second thing that we also want to mention, that of course we will not cover all the subjects, not all my CV, because you can calculate how old I am. We will just mention some aspects. Mm-hmm. So we will prepare a special document, special presentation, where I will provide some links on the topics we will cover and much more. So today we will just present two typologies of careers in a space industry, but I prepared for you much more, and I really encourage you to have a look later, because there's such a variety of aspects and exciting careers. So let's come back to your questions. Why physics? Mm-hmm. And I have to say that equally as space, many people tell me that this is a waste of time and money to study physics and to work in aerospace. So despite all these odds, I decided to study physics. And namely, I followed closely the footsteps of my role model, my inspiration. And because I come from Poland, you can figure out this Professor Skłodowska-Curie, the lady who has two Nobel Prizes. And actually also in my high school competences, I learned that I shall specialize in nuclear physics or repairing pianos. And on the day to go to my university, where I wanted to study actually physics and pursue my dream to be nuclear physicist, I got lost because it was a new city. Mm-hmm. And I found the place where the pianos were repaired. And they were looking for people for the sort of internship. And then I had a huge dilemma. Shall I pursue? Which dream I shall pursue? Which career shall I pursue? Both of them are there for me. In the end, I decided to go to university to have a look mm-hmm. at the university, meet people studying there. But I still follow my dream to learn piano, And I'm learning now piano because, you know, music, these are numbers. This is the wave, waves and so on. I don't need to elaborate on this more. And I also find that physics and the physics field has a very important role to play. And the physicists are frequently role models. Sometimes they continue as a scientist, sometimes they continue as an engineer, sometimes they go into politics or they lead the companies. So I find it also very exciting.
Got it. You had to make a hard decision between physics and piano playing. Now you have some kind of both. But what was your topic of interest at the end of your studies when you could choose a scientific field?
So for this, I have to say that it was quite complex decision. Mm-hmm. Because I'm also a very curious person. I'm curious on many, many fields. And in the end, I really enjoy combining them. Mm-hmm. So for a very long time, I wanted to be a nuclear physicist and build my own accelerator and run my own experiments and smash atoms and particles and to learn and create the theory of everything. Mm-hmm. But then I switched to environmental physics because we are living in anthropogen age, where the humans are impacting the earth. Mm-hmm. And I realized that what I'm actually passionate about is using nuclear measurement techniques for environmental analysis and for my master to determine the impact of the humans on the atmosphere. I use accelerator measurements because isotopes are a fantastic proxy for that. So this is the end of my studies.
This is already a very interesting topic, and it has a big impact on our lives. And when you think back to your studies, did you find them difficult, or was there any exam or something like this where you thought, I can't do that, or it's very hard to do, or was it always easy?
So I will tell you another story. I received always high grades. Mm-hmm. I received a scholarship. I received a medal of my university. During my studies, I also really wanted to study abroad. That's why to be able to do it, I needed to have high grades. This was the rule at my university. Mm-hmm. And I obtained it. Then I was the best student studying in the exchange program. I got all A's. And then immediately I was awarded with the opportunity to continue as a PhD student. Mm-hmm. But finally, my very first test in physics, I failed. And I was considered one of the worst students. So sometimes beginning can be hard, but do not give up. Try again. And you will do this.
So you made it. And like every student, at the end of your studies, you had to decide whether to do a PhD or not, right? And we already know how this decision was made. Why and where did you do your PhD, and what topic did you deal with? Was it environmental physics, or what was the topic there?
Yes, it was environmental physics. Mm-hmm. And how actually I decided on the topic was also very complex, because in Poland, of course, we have very different opportunities, very different measurement techniques and fundings and so on. Mm-hmm. So during my studies, I participated in the course on environmental physics, and I heard very shortly about very complex processes, oxidation processes. These are the processes that are related to keeping the atmosphere, let's say, stable in certain composition. Mm-hmm. But it was also very clearly expressed to me that these processes are so complex and they are not easy to be measured, not easy to be determined. There are needed a lot of measurement, different measurement techniques, or also modeling of the atmosphere to be able to understand them. So we will not even cover anything out of it because it's so complex. I didn't even see any equation on it. I didn't know how the radical is written. But this somehow was for me so exciting, and it sparked my imagination so much that when I landed in Bremen and I learned that one of the professors is a worldwide expert on it, and he created measurement technique for certain type of radicals, PERCA. I said, like, wow, this is it. And then there was opportunity to do the PhD on this field. But the decision to do PhD was very complex as well for me, because it was not only decision to be scientist or in the field, but this was also for me opportunity to study abroad, to get the degree from the worldwide known institute, very prestigious institute, with an excellent supervisor from Germany, where the PhD is recognized worldwide. So this was this aspect. Another, of course, the impact of humans on the atmosphere, which is very important for me. Actually, on the year that I started my PhD, it was 2007, the International Panel on the Climate Change received a Nobel Prize for the recognition of their measurements and all the policies to mitigate the impact of the humans on the atmosphere. So this was a very important year for me and also for the climate. One of my professors, actually, when I was doing my exchange studies, was leading some panels on this IPCC. So he partially he was also awarded. On the other hand, perhaps you have this question in mind, if this somehow was a decision that shall in future impact my career. Because perhaps you heard that Führungskräfte in Deutschland shall have PhD. And I think, and I strongly believe that not.
All right.
I think, and this is also, you can read in some sort of like Gallup Institute or any institutes that are dealing with business development analysis, that basically like 10% of humans are natural leaders. Only 10%. There is another percentage of people, let's say around 20, that have some sort of abilities to develop themselves in the leader. But it doesn't necessarily mean that PhD out of void will create a fantastic leader. So this can for sure enhance, but this is not the case. There are other ways to increase your leadership, start to work, then later to do PhD, work in different companies, on different projects, in very diverse teams, and then you can as well develop leadership skills.
So that's a very interesting and good point, I think. But you mentioned you made your PhD abroad. Was it hard to leave your home, your family, your friends maybe? And yeah, how you made this decision?
For me, it was a very natural part of my career, of my development, because I come from a small village in the end, where my family lives, where my friends live. So to be able to pursue my dreams, physics, aerospace, whatever, I knew that I would have to leave. I always come back. I always come back very glad. I'm very happy to come back and visit them and meet them. I miss them a lot now. We cannot meet at all.
Yeah.
But this is natural. This is a natural step. And this is something that I always tell also to young people. When you have your dream, when you have your passion, when you have your ambition, you also need to think very carefully what will be the price that you will pay for it and name it very quickly. So this monster will later not kill you, not eat you.
Yeah, that's a very good tip, I think, for the whole life. And again, after your PhD, you had to make a decision every physicist has to make. Science at the university versus work in the economy. How did you make this decision?
Oh, this decision. So let's say that my path to industry was not very direct. I did a lot of meander, let's say, like a river. But that's why I think I can bring quite a unique view. During my PhD, I decided very quickly not to pursue academic career as a scientist. And I recognize that there is a lot of research and development opportunities in the industry. I believe there's some point that academia is some sort of cult. And I didn't feel comfortable about everything there.
Yeah.
And what I find in industry very fascinating is that I can create a product that can impact a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas it can have a lot of practical applications. It can be commercialized. And this was something that I was missing during the development of my instrument during the PhD, because it was one of the CAM instruments. And basically, that's all. But funnily, now I will be back to the university. Because I, being quite some time already in the aerospace industry, I noticed that it's very important to use all the resources, to unify different resources over the Europe between the old players like Germany and the new players like Poland. And that's why I created a new space study
mm-hmm.
program, master program between Poland and Germany. And yes, I help to establish this program, and I aim to be the lecturer there in the autumn.
All right. You just said it. Your way of life in university and economy was not very straight. But what was your next step after your PhD? Because it's like an ending of a part of your life. What did you do then?
Yes, it took me some time, of course, to build my network, to build necessary competences to understand how to apply to industry. But long story short, and this perhaps will be also a nice lesson learned for the people who will be listening,
mm-hmm.
how to make this giant leap, yes, to stage, is that basically, 1 decade ago, exactly, I joined the event known Juris Night, Bremen. I don't know if you are familiar with it. This is the celebration of the first human flying to space. And in Bremen, because there's a huge space community of experts and engineers, we are celebrating here the first flight of the human to space.
Mm-hmm.
So I participate in an event like this as a PhD student. And I found on the table the leaflet. And it was via Women in Aerospace Association leaflet. I have decided to join this network, and I started to network with people there. I contacted some members, and I was really inspiring during the meetings about their careers, about the opportunities. And one of the members there recommended me for the job in the company. Therefore, I strongly suggest to join, even during the studies, professional associations like Women in Aerospace or the GLR, SGAC and so on, to build your strong connection, to participate in some fun events, because this is a fun event.
Mm-hmm.
You not necessarily have to do certain projects. You can also have fun.
Mm-hmm.
And in the presentation that I will provide you, I will give you another funny events that you can also participate or even organize by yourself and learn more about the space community.
Mm-hmm.
And now I am a board member of Juris Night Association in Bremen, and I am organizing the events for young people like you. And because I truly believe it can be really stepstone and very inspirational moment for some people that will then jump into aerospace like me. On the other hand, I don't want to limit, of course, and say this is the way to jump in the industry, like to do PhD and so on. You can also join, for example, some graduate program. Airbus has a graduate program that is available for students directly after graduation. And I know people who did it as a physicist, and now they are working in aerospace in different fields. So you don't need to do PhD like me and then do your giant leap to aerospace sector. But there are lots of opportunities during this program where you can learn different and diverse teams in different locations, in different domains. And then you can really have a look where you can fit the best, where you can contribute the best. So I really strongly recommend considering it as well.
So you made your first steps after your PhD in this aerospace industry. What was there your day-to-day work like? So you started from a science field. What was it to start in industry?
So I was very, very lucky to have fantastic colleagues who took a lot of time and energy to introduce me to industry. to introduce me to the processes. As you know, Airbus is quite an established company. It has a lot of processes. It has a lot of heritage because they develop a lot of projects. So we are not doing there anything from scratches. Mm-hmm. And they were really, really supportive on this matter. So as I told you, I will speak about two careers. So let's start with this thermal engineering. So I was very lucky to work in aerospace domain on the hardware development. So I was creating, developing, designing thermal insulations. And like to give you an example, what it could be, this is a very famous MLI, multi-layer insulation. You perhaps know it as a sort of thermal blanket, thermal cover that is also used here down on Earth, for example, in case of emergency or some accident. These are these thin foils that people then are wearing. And it protects them from the rain, from cooling down, for example. And because these foils are golden, so it's also very easy to notice, for example, a person on the accident area. Mm-hmm. Or if the person like is in mountains, lost, then it's very easy to notice such a person. So this application also saves lives, also here down on Earth and then in space, some space vehicles. So I always make some sort of comparison because it gives some imaginative picture to people. Have you watched the Hidden Figures movie about Apollo mission?
Yeah, I watched it.
Exactly. So I am the hidden figure of Artemis. This is a new mission mm-hmm. of humans that will are aiming to fly to the moon. And for the very first time, a woman is going to fly to the moon. This is already confirmed. Mm-hmm. And I do not find this hidden figure some sort of label of pride, label to enjoy. I find that this is a little bit upsetting. There are so many engineers, basic experts that contribute to this project. What is very fascinating also in any aerospace project that you need teams and teams, hundreds of people to build any spacecraft. Mm-hmm. And I think we have to acknowledge everybody who contribute to it, not only the people who are standing like in a Jupiter's of cameras in the first rows and speaking about achievements. So I have been working as a thermal engineer, developing some insulations for the flight model, but also for test models. On Earth, we don't have possibility at all to test the spacecraft under all the conditions that he will experience during the flight through the atmosphere or later in space. So we are creating different models to test and develop different aspects. So it's quite complex. You can quite imagine this is like creating a program on a computer, like on some sort of old computer. It cannot have any bugs, of course, because you are sending humans to space and you are not able to access the final computer mm-hmm. and it has to run perfectly. It's a challenge, yes?
Yeah.
So I also compare that creating this space insulations is like creating a haute couture outfit, one of the kind clothes. Because you need to deal with very delicate materials. You have to wrap them around the 3D structure of the spacecraft. You have to fix it somehow. It has to fit. So, and then you have to select, of course, material. You have to fit it. And then you have to do the test to qualify it for the conditions that will be there in space, namely vacuum, sunlight, which means a lot of radiation. There will be also engines sometimes on and off. So all these conditions are very complex and we have to simulate them here down on Earth. Mm-hmm. So, for example, in Aztec, there is artificial sun, a very powerful source of radiation, and a huge vacuum chamber where we can create these conditions.
So during your PhD time, your research topic was environmental physics. And then you moved into a more technical field in the industry. How steep was your learning curve in these company-related topics?
So, on the one hand, I'm a person who absolutely enjoys learning new things. And I and it's just something that is my daily food. So, so this is what I enjoy, what I need, and what I'm looking for. So, as I said, I had a lot of colleagues in a previous company, in a company right now, who are supporting me because there are a lot of processes, a lot of standards that you are not taught during the universities and you need to catch up with very quickly. But on the other hand, in my role, for example, as a manager, as a coordinator of the proposal of the study, this is a pretty nominal activity of basically any manager standards that you grab and you participate in certain training, certification, you will learn certain tools to execute it.
Got it. You mentioned it in the beginning. Now you're not longer by Airbus. Can you tell us what was your way from Airbus to your new destination?
Yes, I was working in Airbus and I had another steps between joining OHB. And as you know, OHB is a company that is founded in Germany by the German family. It's family company. And it was founded as a startup. It was created as a startup. And after so many years of it, it's still a startup with some experience. And it was the main aspect that was very important for me. I really wanted to work in a startup.
You've already talked about moving from research in university to industry, and you said that learning is very important for you. Do you have any more tips for young professionals who also want to work in the aerospace sector? Because I think maybe it's a hard incoming in this industry.
So firstly, as I said, for me, it was the path that I created by myself. I mean, it was also very natural for me because I live in Bremen. I was studying and living in Bremen, also did a PhD, and this is a space company. And one of the company was OHB, that is just the building next to us. So of course, obviously, I was very excited. What is that? So it was very natural thinking somehow as well to get interest in it. What's there? How is there? And for example, we had the opportunity to visit OHB during my studies as a visit of graduate students. We met actually physicists, board member who turned out to be physicist, and he was telling us about his career, his competences, and it somehow sparkled my imagination that actually I can work in different fields. He was actually working in business development. So it was not something that I was very, very excited yet back then, but it was one of the options. So I think that nowadays there are so many steps that what can do and join aerospace. So one of them is obviously studying physics, like doing bachelor and then doing master. For example, the master that I created. In a space city between two universities. So this really gives a lot of opportunity for network. You can work also as a student during your studies in many of companies because there are so many companies and institutes in Bremen that are related in aerospace where one can get experience. Another topic that I said could be graduate program, for example, in Airbus. Doing a master, like a joint master, for example, with any of the companies. Plenty of companies are offering this opportunity. Even doing PhD, there are also opportunities to do the PhD, industrial PhD. It will last longer, of course, than the typical 3 years, but it's also opportunity. And yeah, sky is basically the limit. Just think about it, read the file that I prepared of different things, reach to people, speak to people. Once again, I also participated in the course of the GLR, yes, Deutsche Gesellschaft für Luft- und Raumfahrt. And it was about space techniques, space systems. And very quickly I realized there that physics taught me absolutely everything about basic of the spacecraft. I could absolutely follow this course and I was just learning perhaps new abbreviations or new names of a system. But physics really prepares us very well to build on it different technical expertise. And then there was a pivotal point for me, because when I was studying physics, I was very, very fascinated by Joukowsky equation. It's the equation that describes, for example, velocity of the rocket. And then you can calculate how much fuel you need to obtain certain velocity. Very quickly, I realized that we will never get to the speed of light with traditional chemical propulsion systems. And that's why, unfortunately, we are very slow, so we will not quickly travel to another galaxy, for example. Mm-hmm. But during this course, I noticed that the propulsion system is basically like max spectrometer. Mm-hmm. So of course, you then later start to build it and develop it. You have to fix this system in standards, in some sort of requirements of the mission, that is a space mission. But on the very, very top level, it's basically the same. So absolutely no worries.
I think that is very encouraging for our listeners. And we now come to your current work. Can you tell us, what does your everyday work look like?
So if I arrive to office, I take my coffee before my computer will boot. Mm-hmm. I also take my time to read the emails, to double check if there are any news. I also structure my day again.
Yeah.
Although I prepare a to-do list the day before. But if something new will show up, I need to restructure it. I also get in touch with colleagues to double check if there are new priorities, if there are new challenges. And then I continue with my priorities of a day. And actually, the day, there's no daily really routine, because it depends on the phase of the study, of the project, mm-hmm. of the proposal. But basically, there's a lot of exchange between internal and external employees, colleagues, or any other partners for the study or the project, preparation and review of deliverables, of the documentation, delivering. Mm-hmm. Documentation, interactions, of course, with the customer. So I'm a lot of time occupied with emails, with preparing documents, distributing and collecting information, and making really sure that everybody are on the same page.
All right. And if you could travel back in time to your college days, what skills beyond physics would you learn by thinking of your now day-to-day work? Are there any skills that you would like to have now?
It's very difficult to say. It's very difficult to reply. Another aspect of living in an aerospace environment, let's say, is that ability to work with different cultures, different languages. So you constantly feel like being in a bubble tower environment. Mm-hmm. So this is very important. I wish I had more this opportunity during my studies, but once again, I moved to another city, and then I moved to Bremen to do my exchange program, where I really met people from all over the world. Mm-hmm. It was really fascinating. Some of these people are still my friends. We are like a family now. We still keep in touch despite all, and we try to meet each other. But otherwise, I cannot really think about any skill that I could have get back then, for example, which will help me in future, because I was not ready back then for it. Mm-hmm. Even if I have told myself, Anna, please excel in field ABC, I was not ready back then for it. And I see it very clearly now.
So I have the feeling that in the space industry, there are more men than women. And are there any organizations, or maybe some organizations, who have this topic in mind and make something for this inequality?
Yes. Yes, this is a very important topic, diversity and inclusion. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's a male-dominated world, white male-dominated world, but it's really changing. There's really arising so many new companies, so many startups, and I really recommend looking at the startup environment mm-hmm. all over the world. For example, one of them obviously is OHB, but there are many others that are building constellation now, like for Earth observation or telecommunication, internet from the sky. But I also would like to mention that my company was founded by a married couple, male and female, and they were both equally contributing. So this is also the reason why I joined the company, because it has very strong male and female model working together. And I find it's very exciting and very important. So obviously, as a woman, I frequently receive this question. And I'm very glad to answer this question. But on the other hand, one has to also remember that when you come to the table, and even if you are the only woman there, mm-hmm. you are frequently not only your gender. You are a person coming from certain background. I'm a physicist, for example, with the PhD. I have two majors, nuclear and environment. Mm-hmm. And both were related to hardware, for example, development. I come from the family that lives in a village. I grew on the farm, for example. This also gives me another perspective. And frankly, I'm the youngest as well. So one has to also remember all these different backgrounds that somehow bring you and make you very special, give a very special and unique impact. Mm-hmm. So, but I now recognize it. I did not feel always this way. That's why I joined, for example, VIA, Women in Aerospace. This is an association that was created here by one of the women, aerospace women. Mm-hmm. That is, by the way, also now a strong advocate for women in space. Mm-hmm. She created Astronautin project. I don't know if you're aware of it, that we are living in a country that is in the end led by the physicists. And the German Space Agency was also led by astrophysicists, but no female ever went to space. And there's Claudia Kessler, who created a project, private project, to send the very first woman to space. And one of the candidates in the end is astrophysicist. So if you consider or make some sort of associations, what kind of job opportunities are there? Yes, you can be astronaut.
All right.
So in this association, I'm an active member, and I invite, for example, inspiring speakers to our events so that they speak about their career, about their lessons learned, and give us some advice and useful tips. Mm-hmm. And as a student, you can also join it.
That's very cool, I think. And there comes the answers to a question many, many listeners have. How does one become an astronaut? Maybe they can go to this organization. One important question by making a decision to work in a special industry is the salary. So what is about the payment in your industry sector?
I think the payment is quite good. Mm-hmm. You can go to IG Metal website and have a look in the tables, mm-hmm. and inform yourself. So this is very transparent.
All right. And another important information is, how family friendly is your job?
So obviously I work in a family company, so obviously we are very family friendly. So actually both my employers, current and the previous, are family friendly. So they offer home office, flexible working hours.
And what was it like during your time at Airbus? Was it also very family friendly, or what were the differences?
Obviously, Airbus is a bigger company, is much more established. So, for example, the difference is the following, that as a big company, they can afford certain amenities, like, for example, kindergarten, mm-hmm. which obviously the smaller companies do not have. But they also offer information about it, guidance, and so on. So even if we don't have our own OHB facility at the university, because OHB is located at the technology park, there are many companies there. So there is also kindergarten there for the employers working in this area.
So that sounds very good and encouraging. And you gave us already many tips to go in the aerospace industry, but Do you have any general advice you'd like to give to young students or young people?
So I'm mentoring very regularly students and graduates, and usually I give advice that is very tailored to the person because I have such a portfolio of dreams. Like, I want to be NASA program manager. Or I want to just to send some certain typology of satellites to space. So obviously I cannot give the same advice to these people. Mm-hmm. But my generic advice is the following. Try very different things when you are young. Mm-hmm. Study abroad. Do practicum in a company. Go to work for startup. Go to work for a very big company. Try to develop very different competences. Try to work over the weekend in cafe and so on. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, try to also understand your superpowers, your talents very early. Know yourself very early. It can help you, for example, Gallup test. This is the test where you can learn your natural competences. You can ask for the feedback of your colleagues and so on. Another thing is that do not compare yourself to other people. Mm-hmm. Because you are very unique. You have your own, as I said, you have your own superpowers, you have own vision, you have your own dreams, and you only know how to reach it. So compare only yourself to your past. This is the best.
Yeah. So, and one last question at the end. Maybe it's obvious for you, but would you study physics again?
Oh, yes, definitely.
So, very good. So, thank you very much for this very interesting interview, and we wish you all the best in the future.
Thank you very much for inviting me to share with you my space tales.
Das war die erste Sonderfolge von Meet Your Future. Wir hoffen, sie hat euch gut gefallen. Auch hier nochmal der Hinweis auf die vielen Zusatzmaterialien und weiterführenden Links, die uns Anna bereitgestellt hat. Ihr findet sie auf der Website unter podcast.jpg.de. Außerdem haben wir sie unter den Shownotes verlinkt. Falls ihr sonst noch Fragen, Anregungen oder Kritik habt, schickt sie uns gerne an podcast.jpg.de. Ansonsten würden wir uns freuen, wenn ihr auch in der nächsten Folge wieder dabei seid.